Welcome everyone to Square Circle Rewind Podcast. I'm your host Jesse and I'm joined by Ben.
Just the two of us again.
Again, yes. Dave is still out with his back injury. He's just not able to sit for long periods of time to do the podcast, and he doesn't want to stand to do it, I guess. We offered him to just stand.
Well, he can still talk. He lies down, he can still talk.
You know, we tried to accommodate him, but he
wanted... I tried to give him unlimited amounts of, like, Percocet. You know, he just wouldn't take it, though. It's probably a responsible decision.
Yeah. We tried to accommodate his needs, but he said, and I quote, "My health is very important, and I need to get healthy." Whatever. So we hope he's back for the next podcast here. But before we get started on our Royal Rumble 1999 review, we are going to talk about our year of 1998 awards. I think we'll start first. Tool of the Year. Dave gave it to Sandman because he absolutely hates Sandman. I don't think Sandman
Not a fan myself. I understand.
I think if like one of Dave's kids was drowning and Sandman saved the kid, Dave would blame Sandman for it somehow. I think his hate is that strong for Sandman.
Dave would do that.
Yeah, for sure.
It's still almost kind of a dick thing.
It's almost irrational at this point.
He irrationally hates Sandman, yes. But also justifiably at the same time.
Yes, yeah, Sandman wasn't great. I pick Hollywood Hogan, and it hurts me to say that, but he is my tool of the year. He only wrestled like four times in the entire year.
They were all bad.
And two were like meh, and the other two were awful. And I think the ones that were awful were the
Jay Leno
match, I think I didn't care for.
Warrior.
And then the Warrior snafu. That was not great. Who did you give your tool of the year to?
I also gave it to Hollywood Hogan because when he was bad, he was bad.
98 was not a good year for Hogan.
He got his new contract. He made his money. Hey, good for him. My hat's off to him. Horrible in the ring.
He made his dough. That's what it was. Okay, so let's go to Performer of the Year. Dave gave it to Shawn Michaels. And I even questioned him in our group chat. I said, "Sean, are you sure, Sean? The guy that only wrestled on two pay-per-views?" But he said, considering what his issues were, he's like, those two matches were great, and he gave it to Shawn Michaels. So, who'd you give your Performer of the Year to?
Mine, overall, he was solid from start to finish the whole year, and he got better as the year progressed. That's what kind of put him over the top with me, The Rock.
I wholeheartedly agree. The Rock got my Performer of the Year. You're exactly right. Every single match throughout the year, he got better. Mm-hmm. Every single one. So much so that Triple H versus The Rock at SummerSlam for the IC title, the ladder match, got my match of the year. So, you know, that's saying something.
The match of the year was a tough one for me. Mm-hmm. Rock and Triple H ladder match definitely in the conversation, but out of all the ones we watched, mine was Super Brawl with Chris Benoit and Diamond Dallas Page.
That was a very good match.
Unexpectedly, just had a great ripped one. ripped it up.
Yep, sure did. I also thought about Goldberg against DDP because that's Goldberg's best match
it
ever
is, and it was a real I just really liked how the streak was really, really highlighted in that match and how DDP came just a sliver away from ending it.
Yeah.
And it was just a tough fight. He gave Goldberg his best fight that mm-hmm. he'd seen up to that point.
Yeah. It was a better match than Goldberg's match against Kevin Nash at Starrcade.
By a little bit.
I think by a lot, actually.
I was being...
Oh, okay. You're being sarcastic?
I was being sarcastic.
I see. Ben's got me everywhere here. Dave picked Shawn Michaels against Stone Cold Steve Austin at WrestleMania.
Interesting.
And I gotta take a sip of water here.
That's interesting, that choice. And I'm sure Dave would just turn around and say, "It's my choice, Ben." Which you know,
it's his feelings. It's his feelings. That's what he would always say. I'm talking about him like he's dead.
It's all about the feelings. I understand.
But I think the big reason he picked that match is because Sean was in such bad state going into it, and he was able to go and have like a 15-minute match with Stone Cold and crown him the new guy going forward. So I think that was the impetus for what he was doing.
He passed the torch to Stone Cold, or Undertaker was going to basically, you know, engraft his fists into Shawn's face if he didn't.
That is true. That is true.
It's an urban legend, but I believe it that that happened. That he taped his fists up and waited in Gorilla. I believe that.
And just sat there just clenching his fist, just letting him know, like, you pull fucking Survivor Series again, we're gonna have some questions, buddy. And just funny, later on in the year, they do the Survivor Series screwjob finish again. Like, how things change, hey? Like, a year later, it's just like, let's just have fun with it, you know? But at WrestleMania, Undertaker's like, you better do the job, Sean. You better do the job. It's just funny how that works. And I think in a surprise to all three of us, based on the scores we gave, WCW got the promotion of the year.
It was a strong start, but a weak finish.
Yes. Barely edging out the WWF, but their start from January till June was very good.
Yeah.
Was very good. But their finish was garbage. But WWF, they didn't have many. I think they had one or two good pay-per-views. The rest of them were just kind of meh, and that hurt them. ECW had one pay-per-view that was good, and the rest were pretty cringeworthy to watch, to be quite honest. So yeah, that kind of flies in the face of what has been said, like the narrative wise, that WCW 1998 was shit. Like that was like the prevailing, thought was like WWF so good. Like WWF storylines were really good, but we don't judge our reviews based solely on storylines. It's more on the matches.
They help.
It helps. But WCW, to be quite honest, WCW's undercard is better than WWF's at this time.
Oh, wholeheartedly.
You know, when you...
Wholeheartedly.
You know, where WWF's main event picture is better than WCW's main event picture.
And you really... You didn't have too many horses in that race as far as WWF's, like, top-tier main eventers was. You had guys coming along
mm-hmm.
and starting to prove that they can run with the big boys. But I mean, WCW's, it's like, okay, Hogan's our top, well, yeah, Hogan's your top guy because he's just going to be because he basically writes the show anyways. But, yeah, like you have The Rock coming in, becoming the WWF champion late in the year. You got Triple H emerging as a big star. You've got, who else? Mankind. Mankind was kind of in the title picture here.
In 97, he was starting to ascend, but in 98...
He shifted in the fifth gear.
In 98, he really took the jump. Obviously, Stone Cold. That was the Austin era had begun.
Yep.
Taker
and Kane, consistent.
Yeah, they were in there consistently. So their main event picture was better. But the undercard for WWF is just not great. No. Throughout 98, it just wasn't strong enough.
Good wrestlers, great talent.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's just...
Yeah. But
they're not Eddie Guerrero. They're not Rey Mysterio.
They're not Chris Benoit.
They're not Benoit.
Yeah, you know, they're...
They're not Booker T.
D. Malenko. Like, there's so many in WCW that had match after match that was so good.
Yeah, in some ways, I mean, just based on his in-ring skills, I mean, Canyon had some good matches.
Yep.
And was looking really Raven. Solid. Raven was Saturn really good. Even, like...
So I think it goes to show that WCW kind of won the promotion of the year based on their undercard, not so much their main event and stories.
But 99 coming up, that's where it kind of starts to flip around a little bit.
Ah, there we go. And we will see this as we review throughout the next few months here as we go through 1999. Obviously, if you've been listening to our podcast, we were doing every single pay-per-view, and now we've kind of changed our format to doing just... the big pay-per-views throughout the year, just because there's so many pay-per-views and it was hurting
our eyes.
And some of them were kind of redundant, you know. But I have taken on the burden to watch these redundant pay-per-views and keep everyone up to date. And if there's a hidden gem in there that I say, you know, everyone should go out and watch this.
If you want to Thelma and Louise your brain over
I
a
do.
Cliff, you go right.
I do. I'm doing it. I'm doing it for the people. I did it for The Rock.
Okay, Rikishi.
Thank yeah. you. I did it for The Rock.
Jesse.
I did it for the people. I can't wait to watch that Armageddon 2000 where Rock does yes. that promo where he makes yes. fun of everybody else in the fucking match. Yeah. Oh my god, that's...
Throws the Stone Cold hat on.
Yeah.
I'm going to sit in my truck and listen to some Backstreet Boys.
Oh my goodness, yes. On his Triple H one, where he's like, because I'm the game. Like just, holy shit. Oh my god, when Rock, like that whole era, like the end of... It's the end of 99 into 2000 when his promos just get so fucking good. So good.
Especially the one on Billy Gunn. Bob, but it doesn't matter what your name is. And I actually just saw a recent interview with Billy Gunn where Billy Gunn said he was watching that. He said he couldn't stop laughing watching it backstage.
Yeah, I bet. They're so well done. All right, so... From Starrcade 1998 to Royal Rumble 99, there was two pay-per-views in between. The first one was ECW Guilty as Charged. Ooh. Yes, I gave it a 3 out of 10.
Oh.
Performer of the night was Super Crazy. Him and Tajiri had a banger of a match.
Was it a triple threat with the nope. Tajiri? Oh no, Little Guido wasn't in there?
Nope, not okay. this not this one. It was just a one-on-one match, but it was really good. And Super Crazy in 99, like they said he was like 21 years old or something. Like, he's young. And Tajiri, like, was the old vet, and he was 28. And it just, like, blew my mind. Tool of the night was New Jack. I understand his shtick. I get it. It's just he's so goddamn reckless with his weapon shots. And I know ECW...
Toaster shots and his...
I know ECW, it's that kind of thing, but it's just, like, there's a way to do it. Like, I'm not saying be Lance Storm and actually not hit guys. But I'm saying there's a way to do it where you can protect guys, and New Jack just doesn't give a fuck. And it drives me batty. Some of the notes that I took from this. No word of a lie, the Dudley Boys do a promo before the match, and it takes 10 minutes. 10 minutes to do this promo. They have their match then with New Jack and Spike Dudley, which is also 10 minutes. And then then after the match, they cut another fucking like 7-minute promo calling out Public Enemy.
The Dudleys do.
So the whole fucking segment with the Dudley Boys took 30 minutes of the pay-per-view. And the pay-per-view was only like 2 hours and 30 minutes. Like, it was just like, what the... Like, why is this on a pay-per-view?
But to try and attempt to have a silver lining in that, I would much rather watch Dudleys try and get heat doing shit like that than... like a 20-minute long NWO tirade.
That's true.
If I have to have a choice in the matter.
this is just funny. A sign in the crowd said Nicole Bass is pretty fly for a white guy. I couldn't.
That
help.
Would be in an ECW crowd,
right? And it's just like, holy shit, that's funny. Like it had me laughing pretty good. Guilty as Charged, the big thing with that pay-per-view was Taz beat Shane Douglas for the title finally.
Oh.
But that match, fuck, it just, sometimes the ECW, their just main events go way too long.
How bandaged up was Shane Douglas in that match?
Not so bandaged, but his wrist was broken, so he had a cast on his wrist.
Okay.
22 minutes that match went, it probably should have gone about 16, would have been probably the sweet spot for it.
16? It's kind of a random number.
Oh, well, I'm just like 6 minutes off it, you know, like, okay. I don't know.
Like 10, like 15 minutes? Is that one extra minute really going to make or break?
It might have. And you know what I came away thinking is I think my disconnect with ECW, and I want to see if you agree with this, my disconnect with it, I feel like it doesn't translate well on TV or pay-per-view. I feel like it was the promotion that you needed to be there live. And if you were there live, you would get the feel of the crowd and the rabid energy, and you would enjoy it so much more. But being sitting on your couch at home, especially 22 years later, it doesn't translate as well. It just seems like it's a reckless, crazy promotion where I feel like if you were there, you would really get into it. Do you think that's...
And you've... Well, the thing with ECW, too, is, I mean, they put a pay-per-view on, like, once every, like, three-quarter moon cycle at a certain access thing in the sky kind of thing. But... You'd have to follow the stories. You'd have to tune in every week. But, I mean, only certain parts of the country, mainly, like, the Eastern Seaboard, got ECW television if you were lucky. And it was on late at night, at, like, midnight on, like, a Friday night or something like that, depending on what channel or cable station it was on. So, and, I mean, that's why I had such a small cult following, because they did follow it religiously. Because, I mean, but, I mean, if you're just a casual fan, just saying, oh, ECW's got a pay-per-view on, you're not going to know what the fuck's going on. You're not going to know what led up to such and such. I mean, Taz and Shane Douglas, you kind of can, because you've kind of watched the pay-per-views in the past. At least there's some kind of track record there. Mm-hmm. But everything else, I mean, it would just seem like everything was just kind of thrown together at the last second.
Hmm. Fair enough. That's
so
a good point.
I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, that's just like as I was watching, because the fucking crowd, like, it wasn't in Philly. It was in, New Orleans, I think?
Guilty as charged.
Maybe not New Orleans, but it was Florida, or something like that. But it was in Florida, because they made a comment about something. I think maybe it was Pensacola or something. But
that would actually make sense. If it was,
and the crowd was just fucking rabid for it.
Yeah.
And like, I was thinking in my head, I'm like, I'm not getting the energy that the crowd is feeling. So I'm like, I feel like you had to be there to understand. To understand it and immerse yourself in the culture, basically.
One of the smartest things they ever did was putting Guilty as Charged in the Hammerstein Ballroom. Mm-hmm. When they transitioned over to that. Because that crowd, that Hammerstein Ballroom New York crowd for ECW, wow. It was bloodthirsty. But almost in a good way, almost.
All right, so then the next pay-per-view that I watched was WCW Sold Out 99.
You missed another sold out. Oh,
yeah. Are you disappointed?
Heartbroken.
It actually wasn't bad. I gave it a 4 out of 10, which is like a meh. Or solid, or close to a solid, I guess. The big main event match was Goldberg beat Scott Hall in a ladder match, a stun gun ladder match. And it wasn't great. I gave that match
really?
A D. Yeah. You know,
why not?
Because it went too long. it showed Goldberg's weaknesses. He went,
get out.
It was a 17 minutes and 47 seconds. Like, for a Goldberg match.
And how was Bam Bam involved?
Right at the end. So was Disco. We saw him at Starrcade. Disco was back in. Took another spear. He sells it well. Gotta give him credit. But he was back in there. The notable things. Norman Smiley's wiggle is the most over thing in fucking WCW at that time.
I believe it.
Fuck, he would do a little hip wiggle and get that hand movement, and the crowd would lose its goddamn mind. Everybody in the crowd. It didn't matter if you're old, young, male, female, everybody was losing it. It was so funny. It was so funny to see. What else happened that was kind of notable? Chris Jericho beat Perry Saturn in a loser must wear a dress match. So this is when Perry Saturn starts wearing his dress. But the whole thing with that is that the referee actually like cost Saturn the match. He fast counted on him. So like, there's this whole thing going on with the ref.
I always thought the dress thing with Saturn involved Raven somehow. Well, okay.
Yeah. There was a fatal four-way, or it was a four corners Cruiserweight title match between Billy Kidman, Rey Mysterio, Juventud Guerrera, and Psicosis. And that was a lot of fun. I gave that a B. The only reason I didn't give it an A is because just the four corners concept makes no sense to me. To tag in and out? Like, why?
Yeah, I don't get
why
that.
Why would you tag out?
I don't get that.
You know, that makes no sense. But these guys, they busted their ass and they flew around the ring.
Why wasn't
they
that
absolutely
the ladder match?
Flew. Sorry?
Why wasn't that the ladder match?
Right? Guess you can't have two on one card, I guess is the...
Or,
is the
you know, thing. He cannot have a taser on a... Never mind. Moving on. There's no point. What's the point?
And you know what? Surprisingly, Ric Flair and David Flair had a match against Kurt Hennig and Barry Windham, and it was actually very, very entertaining to watch. because the Henning and Wyndham, you could totally tell they're just kind of leading David through everything, and they're ribbing him with sometimes. There was a couple times that Kurt Henning was just fucking with David, and it was so much fun. And then Ric Flair got in there, and the fucking crowd loses it. And this is crazy Ric Flair, where he's humping and gesturing towards everything, and oh, it was a blast. Blast to watch. Performer of the night, I gave to Rey Mysterio, because he's just a ridiculous human. Just ridiculous. Tool, I gave to Mike Enos, who we discussed last podcast.
Blake Beverly.
That is Blake Beverly. originally, I was going to give it to Van Hammer, but he didn't annoy me as much as Mike Enos did. And I was thinking, I'm like, oh, I'm not going to give it to Mike Enos because I thought he was a new guy. He was green. But then when he told me he was Blake Beverly, I'm like, oh, fuck no. Like, he needs the Tool. Because, like fuck, man, you've been around for years. And you could tell Chris, he faced Chris Benoit, and you could tell Benoit was just pissed with him. Just could not, there were so many times, mistimed clotheslines and stuff, and you could tell Benoit's like, I'm just going to fucking tear off your head here. Like in 2 minutes, I am going to tear off your head. So that was interesting. All right, so let's get into the Royal Rumble, shall we? 99, yes. Where McMahon has levied a bounty on Austin's head, and if you eliminate him, you get 100K.
It's kind of a small bounty.
Right?
100K?
Come shit. So the first match of the night had Big Boss Man beating Road Dogg in 11 minutes and 52 seconds. Not for the hardcore title.
They both have to be in the Rumble later.
What'd you think of the match?
Bossman is still moving around pretty good, I find.
Yeah?
Road Dogg was okay. Road Dogg's moveset, I mean, he does things to play to the crowd, to get the crowd into it. I understand that. Mm-hmm. You want the crowd involvement, but pretty good match. I mean, nothing too spectacular. There were no big botches that I really noticed that were worth mentioning. Which I don't even think there was any botches, but decent match. I gave it a C. It was an okay opener.
I gave it a D just because I was kind of bored with it. I don't know. It kind of went long.
I guess
it went long, and I was like, okay, let's get going. And Road Dogg bumps weird for some moves. You know, he took a spinning back elbow. And instead of, falling on his back, he stumbled forward and through the ropes. You know, and it's just and he does, every match he has, he does a bump like that. And I'm like, huh? Like, why are you...
He defies physics.
Yeah. It's so weird.
Have you seen his hair?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So let's go to the next match then. Ken Shamrock retained his Intercontinental title over Billy Gunn in 14 minutes and 24 seconds. Ken Shamrock just keeps on getting better and better. Billy Gunn flies around the ring like crazy.
And he's getting better as time goes on, yes, too, even.
Yes, you could tell that they're going to push him as a single star here. Mm-hmm. I gave the match a C. What did you give the match?
I gave the B because I thought it had really, really good intensity from start to finish.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing with Shamrock. As you just mentioned, he gets better and better as time goes on. But you really notice that he's getting better when he becomes a heel.
Yes.
Because, as I kind of mentioned while we were watching the match, who's really going to beat the shit out of Ken Shamrock?
Yeah.
So why would he continuously take beatings as a face? He's the world's most dangerous man. But yet people that he's in the ring with are going to constantly beat him down, and Ken Shamrock's going to get a comeback? No. Ken Shamrock should be suplexing you, ripping your head off, beating the shit out of you.
He should be killing dudes.
Yeah, he should be. He really should be.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly with that. He should be.
So it makes sense. So I like him as a heel. I prefer him as a heel, to be honest. And I mean, he's got that crazy look in his eyes as the match is progressing too. Mm-hmm. I love the finish when he noticed that Billy Gunn's leg was hurt. And he just sunk right in there and just nope, fuck, give me that thing. I'm gonna end.
Put
this
on
right
the ankle
now.
Lock and tapped out, and that was it.
That's great psychology on his part.
Really was.
Billy Gunn solid in the ring. He looked like he was I was kind of thinking, if they're actually in a bar fight, these two would actually probably have a good throwdown. Because Billy's a pretty big dude. He could probably hold his own. Big Texan.
Billy Gunn's one of those guys. I saw this on social media. And somebody asked, like, some of the wrestlers, like, who in the business always surprises you for how big they are? And everyone said Billy Gunn.
He's deceivingly big.
Like they're like, he's 6'5" and, like, a legit 250 pounds jacked. And they're like, on TV, it doesn't come across that way because, like, everybody's huge. But they're like, he's a big dude.
Yeah. I gave the match a B. It was solid outing from both of them. And I love the finish is what I love the most.
Okay, next match, X-Pac retained his European title over Gangrel in 5 minutes and 53 seconds. I really like this match. I gave it a B. These guys were flying around the ring. Teddy Long fucks up. counts 3, even though X-Pac's shoulders were on the way up. So the crowd starts chanting, "You fucked up," at the ref. So,
well,
you know, shit happens. But the match itself was a lot of fun.
Yeah, the timing was impeccable on everything. And, I mean, we know how good X-Pac is in the ring. But, I mean, I thought Gangrel was fantastic in this match.
Yes, he was.
He was doing some innovative spots, too, with X-Pac's body in certain positions, like in the corners. And he was kind of throwing some innovative movesets at him to take advantage. I was like, that's kind of like a... He kind of does like a cross body to X-Pac after he misses the Bronco Buster that one time.
Yep.
I thought that was really cool. I'm like, that's good stuff right there.
I've always liked this trap arm overhead belly to belly.
Yeah, that looked fantastic. I mean, X-Pac's going to bump it like a champ, of course, because that's what X-Pac does.
I still don't understand X-Pac go-away heat or X-Pac heat. Like, I haven't seen it yet, so I don't know when this comes in. But right now, I'm like, he's still over.
Yeah.
So where's this X-Pac heat coming from?
It's X-Pac heat?
Yeah.
What's X-Pac?
I that's like, I've just heard that term thrown around and I don't understand it. Like go away heat, I guess?
Where do you hear it from? Like,
just on
what's the source that
you heard? Just internet. IWC, baby. Internet wrestling community. You know the guys that know everything.
Oh, yeah, the ones that wanted Kofi Kingston as champion, they finally got and they booed him a month later. Oh, those guys?
Those guys, yeah. Yeah, some guys.
Fuck those guys.
Well, Ronda Rousey has a problem with those guys. Did you see
what
she said about Bray Wyatt?
Good for her for doing that.
Oh, shit.
I'm 100% with her on that one.
That's good stuff. So would you score that European title match?
I gave it a B. Love that match. Best match we've seen so far.
We're liking this Royal Rumble card so far. Next match, Sable retains her women's title in a strap match, beating Luna Vachon in 4 minutes and 43 seconds. Again, solid work from these two.
Yep.
They work within Sable's limitations. You got to touch the four corner thing. I think that my only thing with that was that I thought the momentum had been broken up, so they should have had to touch the corners again. But I guess the good old ref discretion came into play there.
I mean, the strap shots, I mean...
Oh, yeah,
they're
brutal.
They're cringing, but at the same time, they're cool to hear because it's just like, oh, shit, that's got to hurt. You want realism. You want your suspension of your disbelief.
Yep.
But, I mean, you probably did get hurt getting those things. Luna's outfit was, we'll just say it was very cheeky.
That's a good way to put it. That's a good way to put it.
Couldn't wear that today, I don't think.
Nope. Sure couldn't.
Obviously, the blueprint of that entire match is probably Luna's brainchild.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, she's been in the business for probably about 10 years at this point. I mean, she knows this kind of stuff. She probably had those kind of matches or something along those lines in the indie circuits. Or, you know, she's watched enough. She grew up in the business as Mad Dog Vachon's niece.
Mm-hmm.
So she's seen it. Obviously she's old enough to have seen, like, you know, Superstar Billy Graham and Dusty Rhodes in a bull rope match, that kind of stuff. She knows that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and it showed here. She led Sable through it. Sable looked good. Luna looked good throughout it.
Mm-hmm.
I gave the match a C.
Yep, same.
It's fun. It was a fun short match. Good stuff. Good stuff all around. All right, our next match: The Rock beats Mankind in an I Quit match for the WWF title, becoming the champion.
Beating is an understatement.
That is not the right word I should use. I now realize he beats him in 21 minutes and 46 seconds.
Well, obliterates him in 20.
This is
minutes.
The match that we all know.
It's on Beyond the
Mat. It's on Beyond the Mat with those 11 chair shots to the head, which the most insane thing to me is that Mick and Rock discussed the plan for him to hit him in the head while handcuffed before the match. And like, this was planned.
And a really sad thing to see, too, is Mick's wife is in the front row with Noelle, and Noelle is crying her eyes out just watching Mankind take this brutal, brutal beatdown. From 13 chair shots? Is that 11. What it was? 11?
11 chair shots to the head. I've read some articles in the lead up to this match and to reviewing this pay-per-view, and everyone said that The Rock was very disturbed backstage of what happened, but it's like the way it was talked about was that Mick wanted to happen, maybe not to that extent, but they had discussed these chair shots, and Rock was very disturbed and uneasy about what had just transpired.
You can see during the match as he's giving him the chair shots, there's reluctance in his body language.
Well, especially, I think the last, like, the first two or three, he threw him in there pretty stiff. But then when he could see he was out on his feet, the chair shots, he lessened.
They got lessened.
That's still not great.
No.
But, yeah, that was, Ben and I were sitting here and it was disturbing to watch, but, let's rewind a bit and go through and talk about the match before that. The match before that was so entertaining to watch. I love The Rock with his, Mick asking him if he quits, and The Rock's like, "I'm going to beat your ass, you fat piece of trash." I like how
up yours, Rock.
Yeah. Yeah. I like how The Rock puts on Michael Cole's headset and starts talking shit, and then he's like, "What, King, you don't have anything to say to the Great One?" And King goes to say something, and he says, "Shut up, you piece of trash," and he turns around and Mankind beats him up. Oh my god, up until that last 2 minutes, the match was so entertaining and so much fun to watch. Even when Mick flies off the guardrail onto the speakers, and all the sparks fly, you could actually see Rock's like, "Fuck, like did he get electrocuted?" And then as soon as they find out he's okay, then he snaps right back into heel Rock and starts talking trash again. I really enjoyed this match, even with the chair shots. The chair shots did dock it a little. I probably would have given this an A+, but I'm just giving it an A. Man, these guys' chemistry is off the charts, these two. And they're going to have more matches. We were discussing they're going to have that halftime heat match,
which to me is even more entertaining than this match.
That's
because I've seen that match.
And that's saying something. And then they're going to have another match of St. Valentine's Day Massacre.
Mm-hmm.
So these guys, their chemistry is off the charts. What did you think of the match?
Oh my god, like just the comedy that's intertwined with them just wanting to just obliterate each other is just unreal. Like nobody can come and reenact what these two do with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like Stone Cold and somebody else couldn't reenact this. Like this is specifically tailor-made to these two. You know, like only certain people can be certain characters. Like Heath Ledger can only be that version of the Joker.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else can do it. But these two can only be, have this kind of match and have the type of chemistry like you mentioned and just have the entertainment value.
Yeah, like Rock.
This can't be taught.
Rock Austin is great in its own right and one of the greatest rivalries of all time, but it's not this rivalry. This rivalry has a lot of viciousness, which Austin and Rock don't have.
But it's also got that cheeky
humor.
Comic relief in there, too.
Yes. Yeah. It's
it's got everything, really.
It really does. I just thoroughly enjoyed it. Great match. I gave it an A. Like,
I could watch a 3-hour pay-per-view with these two.
Yeah. Really good. Really good. An hour worth of promos, and then, you know. I also love how The Rock did the people's elbow on the chair onto his head. That was pretty, that was pretty funny. So, also, we discovered that The reason The Rock wears the tracksuit at this time is because he had cosmetic surgery, and he wanted to cover up the scars until they healed. So that's why he was wearing the tracksuit.
Don't know where the surgery was done, but he had surgery.
Well, somewhere I would assume on his torso, like on his upper body, is what I would assume.
Okay.
And it just kind of you just do the track pads because it kind of just brings the outfit together and, you know, makes him look like a complete douche. Which is probably what he's going for.
Are those tearaway pants he's got on?
Oh, I don't think so.
No, they don't seem to be.
We're looking now. I don't think they don't seem to be. That's the Eric Bischoff special from Starcade.
Ah, okay.
Yes. So what did you score the match?
I gave it a 1 or an A because I couldn't stop watching the match. Like, entertainment. Like, that's the emphasis and the underlining of this match is just entertaining.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All the way through. Like, these two just in general. Just entertaining. I mean, wait till Rock and Sock Connection later on in the year. That's when it just... You just lose your shit laughing at these two.
Yep. Totally true. And in the main event...
Daddy.
There we go. Mr. McMahon wins the Royal Rumble in 56 minutes and 38 seconds.
We wish we were making that up.
It's just... The weirdest.
Vince McMahon won the Royal Rumble.
What a weird statement.
He won the last Royal Rumble of the millennium.
Yes. Yes, by eliminating Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Overall, I gave the match a C. I just thought the storyline-wise... It was really well done with the Austin McMahon stuff and the bounty and all that stuff. But the actual match itself, there were so many dead parts. And there was not a lot of grade A talent in this Rumble.
No.
Which kind of dragged it down, I think, a little bit. Mm-hmm. But the way they spaced out the McMahon-Austin thing where they had them start and then they had them finish... You had Mabel being kidnapped by the Ministry of Darkness.
While Austin drives back from the hospital driving the ambulance.
Yeah,
a lot of stuff going on.
Just driving
back.
A lot
of illegal activity going on, but it's wrestling, so you can get away with it.
Yeah, there's no laws in wrestling. I'm just trying to think of other moments that popped out to me. Kane came in and dominated, but then eliminated himself going after orderlies from the mental hospital.
Has it out for them.
I guess.
China in the Royal Rumble.
Yep, eliminating Mark Henry.
The first woman ever.
Yep, and she got a good pop when she came out. Terry Runnels came out in a see-through shirt, basically.
Yeah, that you saw for about half a second before
they panned away. Another... They're like, oh, yeah, we're seeing everything there.
And I was just like, wait, did we just... It's kind of like the Janet Jackson thing at the Super Bowl. It's like, wait, was that a full...
Did we see nipple? Did that just happen?
The answer to both questions is yes.
The crowd really got upset when Godfather's hose left and when Deborah left.
Which tells you a lot. Well, not so much about The Godfather, but it tells you a lot about Jeff Jarrett. Is the pop's not for him, and I'm
not
just
for
like,
him at all.
Yeah, relax, Jarrett. Not your pop.
It's not for you, buddy. This is not your night. This is not your night. Austin looked good throughout the Rumble.
Yep.
Road Dogg also looked pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Billy Gunn came out wearing one boot.
Yeah, and he did well.
He did all right for what it was.
He flies through that ring.
He does.
He flies through it. He even with only one boot on, he was flying through it. Who stood out for you?
Let's see. It's kind of like you said. There was a lot of dead air, so to speak.
Yes.
Who stood out? I mean, Edge did an all right job. He came in pretty early. Lasted in there for... If I'm not mistaken, he was probably the longest lasting participant outside of McMahon and Austin. Well, McMahon, not really, because he was just kind of doing commentary. And just...
McMahon lasted 56 minutes and 38 seconds, Ben.
There's just a lot. It's just a busy Royal Rumble. You were really all over the place, too, because Austin McMahon went to the back, and then Austin got jumped in the ladies' room. Again, I'm not making this up. I really wish I was, but I'm not. And then they go back to the Rumble. There's just a lot of shit that happened in that span of an hour.
Yes, really, really
probably,
was.
Probably the busiest Royal Rumble match. But at the same time, but it's really weird because we just said there's a lot of dead spots.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's busy.
What did you what did you score the Rumble?
I gave it a B because it was pretty entertaining from start to finish.
All right.
Actually, another memorable... I was happy, but very sad when Owen Hart came out. I'm like,
we're right.
We're in 99. That's
It sucks. Every time we're going to see Owen, we're going to just keep on thinking, well, this is the last time we see him at this event. This is the last time we see him at this event, you know? So that's kind of, that was a somber
It's
feeling.
Bittersweet.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's give our scores and our awards. What did you score the pay-per-view?
I scored the pay-per-view a 6 out of 10, solid from top to bottom. My performer of the night, I gave to Rock. I'm going to give it to The Rock. I was going to give it to Rock and Mankind, but I gave it to The Rock because I think he had impact in the result in the Rumble as well.
Mm-hmm.
Played a big part in that. And him just being his character in the Mankind Rock match, like, he was awesome tonight. And my tool tonight was the referee Teddy Long for the X-Pac Gangrel two count blunder.
Reaching at that point.
Yeah, it really was.
Like, it was a solid pay-per-view, so it's hard to find something that was like, ooh, yeah, that's an easy pick for tool tonight.
But when you also have the crowd chanting, "You fucked up."
Yeah, that kind of
seals your fate.
Yes. I also scored the pay-per-view a 6 out of 10. Good way for WWF to start the year of 99. Performer, I gave to Mankind. Because he, you know, taking those bumps and everything and taking those chair shots, I couldn't help but not give him, like, I had to give him the performer of the night. And tool of the night, I gave to Teddy Long as well.
Mm-hmm.
So... that is it for this episode. We will be back with reviewing ECW Living Dangerously 1999, and that'll be dropping September 15th. So look out for that one. Have a great one, everybody.
Stay safe, everyone.
A little bit of the bubbly.